Hello. The following podcast comes with a disclaimer, which probably isn't a good sign, is it? I decided it would be a good idea to sit down with some mates of mine and do a year review. So going month by month, talking about some of the things that went on that month in the news, in music, in our own lives, and record it. We also decided it'd be good to have a drink while we do this. Now, I don't really drink much anymore. I've probably been drunk probably twice this year up to this point. I figured that these episodes would get at least two episodes out of, so at least a couple of hours. We ended up drinking and talking for over 5 hours. We broke it up so it's episodes, but we do get quite drunk. The thinking was, in the December period and new year, early new year and stuff like that, I don't want to be chasing guests, trying to hassle people to sit down and have a conversation with me. But equally, that's the time of year that you might have some free time to fill, or you might really want to go for a walk and escape the family and stuff like that, or have the worst of the train journeys because it's you shouldn't be at work, you should be at home by a fire. So I didn't want to not do the podcast. A lot of people take December off. I didn't want to do that. So we've actually turned out we're going to be doing extra episodes in December because this 2 hours of chat turned into 5 hours of drunk rambling. I wanted to do this disclaimer because I can't guarantee the quality is high. I can't remember what we said or what we did, but I do remember that we had a great time, so hopefully you will too. Thank you for the support. Oh, and again, like some of them, I was drunk and forgot to give a gap for the intro music to come in or outro music or anything like that, so they're going to be a sloppy mess. But yeah, thank you for supporting for the whole of 2015 and all the episodes you've got down with and pushed about and used word of mouth to keep us in the top 10 regularly on the iTunes chart and on all podcast charts. So thank you for your support and happy new year. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a special Distraction Pieces podcast. Normally I have this gap where I do the intro and then I have the interview, but I'm in the room with the people I'm interviewing, and I'll tell you what's happening. I decided that it wasn't worth, over the Christmas period, it wasn't worth wasting a good guest, so I just get a couple of my muggy mates in. So, I thought it'd be good to do a year in review. So what we're going to do is we're going to sit down and go month by month and talk about just things that happened. Again, I need to stress that this isn't journalism or we're not intelligent, basically. So it's going to be just, there'll be some news in there, but there'll also be films and music and TV and sport, MMA, and podcasts. So we're just going to discuss tons of good stuff. And when I was thinking about who would be good for this, I asked a few people and they weren't available. So, no, again, I'm mugging. I chose two people. Two people who basically they both do my Wheel Is club night with me, and essentially what we do there is we go and do the club night, but it's once a month that we get to meet up and we generally have a drink and talk about stuff that's been going on. So it felt like a good mix of people to have on the podcast. Because I'm doing these, we're going to be doing them as live. I haven't mentioned that we're going to be getting drunk as well, so we're starting drinking now, or we've already started drinking, and then we're just going to see how many hours we get out of this. We'll spread it over several episodes. So that's what's going to happen. So I'll start with, I'm joined by Christopher Glasson. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm okay, mate.
If you speak towards the mic, at least, give it some respect. But
is that better?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, sure?
I'll adjust it slightly.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, no. Chris started up A Rebels, who a lot of you will know, were one of the original sponsors of the podcast, particularly on the Russell Brand one, which is one of the most downloaded ones we've had. And, I mean, we've known each other years, but the reason you guys were sponsors at the beginning was because, really, when our right started off, me and you kind of worked together on getting my stuff out there and living in a van for a bit and touring the country. Yeah.
Kindness of Strangers Tour.
Yeah, the Kindness of Strangers Tour. And Redshift Rebels is a clothing company that you set up
with, or give a brief, not the fucking essay you normally give, like a brief a brief description of what Redshift is.
So I finished uni, and I decided to set up a clothes label that didn't advertise, because I didn't like advertising.
Yeah, so you did a degree in economics and kind of saw the darkness of what people spend on advertising
quite,
and that.
Quite false, like that whole industry and how advertising is in general. Still not a big fan of it. So I set up a clothes company that instead of advertising, we'd sort of like, we'd support new music and help produce and promote new bands. And you were our first experiment, I guess. Yeah. And it was
just good timing because you were doing that as your first business or anything that you were setting up. I'd just started doing music and it kind of, it worked nicely. And you guys did, I say are you guys, at the time it was literally just you.
Yeah, man.
And you did a little, a mixtape type thing that had me on and a few different a bit of speaking about the company and stuff like that as a promo as a giveaway. So technically it was the first, possibly my first actual release, I guess. It was at the same time as I did No Commercial Breaks, I guess.
It was we did that, and I think on that CD you released
it was an exclusive track, wasn't it?
You released an exclusive track on that.
Yeah, Mr. Otis Regrets. I have people hit me up about that every now and then and go, where can I find the lyrics to it? And I have to say I don't remember how it goes at all. Because it's one that I recorded then, but because it wasn't on any of the albums, it's not one I've done live or gigged much. So
it's a weird one. I remember when you told me what the track title was in time for me printing the CD.
Yeah,
I think I called it just Mr. Otis.
Yeah,
so I think that's
Mr. Otis.
It's spelt wrong on the.
It's fine. I've just done a track with the British Red Cross, which is something we'll get to talking about. But we recorded it earlier in the year. And there's been so many emails back and forth now because it's a big charity album thing of like, so what's the confirmed title and what thank yous would you like and all of it. I'm just like, just you write something, email it to me and I'll sign that off. I don't care what the title is with the... Fuck, I've done the work. I gave you an hour of my time. That's all I'm giving to charity. That's my maximum answering emails as well. And we're also joined by Stuart Whiffin, who was available.
Just about, yeah.
No, so Stu, so you've been doing at the start of We Are Lizards, me and Chris kind of DJed together, and we came as a package at the time. But you're definitely like a 50%. I'm not. You're smiling because you think I'm going to say something horrible. Yep. I will. Again, you need to be warned that this isn't the usual podcast where it's a professional and with guests. Mm-hmm. We're going to just be mugging each other off constantly. But you were definitely at least. Yep. A 50% part of We Are Lizards ever happening, because you kind of approached me and said, I think you should do a club night.
Yeah.
And you've done club nights for years. You did the Pink Toothbrush, which is the one that we all used to go to as teenagers.
Yeah,
still do.
You're old as fuck. I've not mentioned that either. You're kind
I'm really old.
50 what? 52.
He's not that old.
You not? No. I'm just messing.
No, but you were a few years above us, so when we were going to the brush, you'd already had the wherewithal to go, right, you used to go there as a teen. You're like, right, I can get involved in this and DJ here and run it. And
yeah, totally.
So and you were talking about it recently on the One Show.
That's right, yeah.
On the, of the Pink Toothbrush. So give us a little bit of Pink Toothbrush story and history.
Great, free plug.
Yeah.
The Toothbrush is the longest running alternative club in the UK.
Yep.
Opened in 82, was open a few years prior to that, and it was called Crocs, named...
Because it had a crocodile in it, didn't it? Or an alligator.
It wasn't actually an alligator, but there was, as you walked into the club, on to the left of the entrance was a small pool with an alligator in. And at that time, to paint the picture a little bit clearer, it's in a place called Rayleigh in Essex, which is... It's not really on the map as a go-to place for a night out, really, is it? And it's a little doorway, and it's obviously called the Pink Toothbrush. So it's a strange little place, but it started out, and at the beginning of the 80s, it was a real hotspot for the new romantic scene. Depeche Mode were obviously the resident band, and Moya and Vince Clarke, and you know, it was a little hive, and it's stayed kind of true to that sort of left-field alternative scene right up until... last Friday, and it'll be doing it again this Friday.
It is weird that that we would all be getting cabs and trains and buses to Rayleigh, which again there's not a lot there. There's all I've ever been to in Rayleigh is either a pub before the Pink Toothbrush or a kebab shop after the Pink
totally.
Toothbrush.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Because of the Pink Toothbrush. I've never been for any other reason.
No, and like you used to tell them about how you used to get in.
Yeah, I always remember the first time I had a big interview in Mixmag, and I got a message off Stu instantly the next day when it came out, because I mugged off two of his nights he ran, because I said about how at the Pink Toothbrush we used to break in, so one of us had paid to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd go round to the fire exit at the back, open the fire escape, and the rest of us would bomb in.
If you're interested in this...
It doesn't work now. Obviously, there's good security, but...
Yeah, we're hot as shit on that now. but go on YouTube, and there is a Pink Toothbrush 30th anniversary documentary, which Pip's in, and Jubitus is in, and lots of other local people that you might recognise.
And was made by Tom Coles as well, who's done all the music videos with me. I've had a lot of requests to have him on the podcast, which... I can't be fucked with that.
No, he's not as fun as us.
No, obviously I will do at some point, but yeah.
But in that, we do actually recreate breaking in.
Yes, so
you
recreate the breaking in.
Done.
Yeah, so I've given you a teaser, but I won't give the full details there. So that's who we're with, and we're in the Whiffin.
Yes, you are.
Which is the bar at the end of your garden.
Clever play on words there.
Yeah, because of the name.
Very good.
Thanks.
You've actually been mentioned a few times on the podcast, haven't you?
Particularly good.
No, always just mugging you off in some way.
No.
Gal Poulter mocked my name.
Yep.
That hurt.
She called you Whiffy.
I loved Gal Poulter.
Old Whiffy. Stu Whiffy.
Yep, that was nice.
It's also interesting that I'm... And you've listened to some of the podcasts. So the things we're going to go through, I've made some notes of different things. A few of them are episodes of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I know that you've listened to a fair few. I know that Chris has listened to fuck all of them. So
I've listened to, I don't know, four.
Yeah, this is my favourite part, because the reason I know, and this is a great exciting bit now, the reason I know that Chris hasn't listened is one of the ones he's listened to is the Alan Moore one.
I haven't listened to the last 20, 30 minutes of it.
Yeah, because literally... It's in the last hour that I give Chris specifically a name drop and talk about Chris to Alan Moore, who's one of his heroes.
No way.
So it was hilarious when he's like, I listened to that one. I was like, oh, did you? It's like, it's good. I just missed the end of it. It's like, right. Didn't mention that we have a great discussion about you.
It's a complete flip of me being up and going, for fuck's sake, Pip, you've just mentioned me again. I got all excited and then just got slagged right off.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Do you know what? I love that. I got up to when Alan recited that poem, Spoken Word, which was dope.
And sent you to sleep, right?
No, I had to go out and then I had to go back to it. And do you know what? It's weird you say that, because I know that a few times you've been like, you listen to my podcast yet? And I was just thinking he was getting all precious over it.
It was only on but that one, because it is one of his heroes. He's a big fan of Alan Moore. Yeah, and we discussed only because Alan started talking about lucid dreaming, which
unreal.
That and masturbating are your two main things.
They're my things.
Yeah, so we have a big discussion about it. So anyone who wants to hear that can go back to the Alan Moore episode.
Including me.
This is going to be a whole episode of plugs, basically. So, right, that's the end of the intro, I guess. So we're going to start getting through. As said, I should explain and make it clear. We've started drinking already. We're going to go through a month at a time. If we get up to about an hour... I'll stop, and then the next month will start in next week's episode, if that makes sense. And we'll get progressively more drunk and progressively less intelligent.
Coherent.
Yeah, coherent and any good. So at this point, as I said, as I normally record the intro separately, at this point, we're going to have the theme music. There we go. That was the theme music. You didn't... I mean, we're in the room and we didn't hear that, obviously, but...
What is your theme music?
See, you wouldn't know. Oh, yeah, cheers for listening, Chris.
No, it's your... It's distraction pieces.
It's introduction, but cheers for listening to the albums as well. Chris Lasser, one of my oldest friends. So let's start off in January, and again, we're going to...
You sponsored a podcast, you prick.
I gave him free sponsorship. If I charged him for the sponsership, he would have listened.
It's against principles, isn't it?
We've started the second part now, I should also mention that you two have now gone into kind of business together. So you work with Redshift, and Redshift works with you on club promotion as well.
That's right.
So what's the kind of... Yeah, what's... So you
Chris
do...
does the club promotion, and I have to listen to the podcast on the afternoon.
And pay attention.
So a lot of the time... Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
That is the arrangement.
That's the arrangement. Yeah. So that's nice. So obviously we're going to be talking about a lot of good and positive stuff, but also it's been a proper fucked up year. So yeah, I guess we're not going to, I mean, we'll talk a bit about that, but the more drunk we get, we might not dwell too much on that. But
no,
January was when the Charlie Hebdo stuff happened in Paris, and obviously that seems even more recent because of this, the second one. There's been two tragedies in Paris in 2015, which is kind of fucked up. But
dark. And the fallout of which they're sort of like all debating now as we speak.
With all sorts of narcissists. But again, the thing that struck me, obviously we can talk about it in as much detail as we want, but the thing that really genuinely moved me, and I get a bit annoyed with outpourings of sadness on social media, because as Anthony Jeselnik addressed, and we watched this recently, had a brilliant thing, a brilliant part in his set where he's kind of saying that people who've been affected by tragedies the day after a tragedy aren't on social media. So social media is full of people going, don't forget about how sad I am. And it's kind of part of what he says. But that aside, a picture circulated of the day after the tragedy, just numerous squares in Paris and in France across, just filled with people just saying not afraid and still strong and all these other things. So that just blew me away, seeing the French people are reacting in such a manner, and not in the British or American way, and not to hate on any of our tragedy, but the British and American way is traditionally, who are we going to kill?
Draw up battle lines.
So it was kind of beautiful to see the French way of just going, right, no, we're just going to show that we're unified, and we're still very European and very kind of warmongering about it all. So, but what do you think on all of that? On the actual tragedy itself, because the fact is they were bombed or they were killed because of some cartoons that they drew.
Yeah, so we're talking about...
Should the reaction be stop drawing them cartoons, or should the reaction be no, fuck them, we're going to draw them, but then is it worth people dying over cartoons? What's kind of...
Oof, it's a tough one, that.
I've started off heavy, haven't I? I've gone in heavy. It's going to lighten up.
What about the movies in January?
It was going to start on New Year's Eve and talk about a party.
No, we're going to get straight
people
in.
People getting shot.
We're
going to
get straight in.
Stuff.
But yeah, no, let's go in on it.
I think that you got to have freedom of speech. Whether or not you're, you know, people are arguing or you're sort of asking for it, I don't know. I just think that, you know, it's a bit like our sense of humour. Our sense of humour sometimes can be quite off the wall.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be sort of like penalised for being able to express that, especially, you know, that sort of satire
totally
as well.
Agree.
So,
totally agree.
Yeah, I'd say mug them off, really, if that's what you want to do.
And I think the beautiful thing was, it's easy for outsiders to say that because we're not the ones under threat, but it was beautiful, the French. And again, with the most recent tragedy in France, which again we'll get into. I'm slurring my words already. I've had one Bacardi and Coke.
You've had one sip.
I've had half a sip. I made it quite strong. The beautiful thing was seeing the French a reaction again, and after Charlie Hebdo, instantly tons of the illustrators and artists drawing stuff, still taking the piss and still basically saying fuck you.
Yeah.
You can't break us in that way. So that's it's amazing.
You can't censor stuff like that. It's comedy, isn't it? If you're gonna, a cartoon is comedy, isn't it? And you comedians are comedians, you know, in whatever form, and you can't censor that.
That's just unfortunately not how the people who did the, you know, committed the attack saw it, and that's a whole different thing. Is, you know, we have a set of value judgments here that say you should be able to have satire and joke about these things, and there's a complete. But the thing is, there's a group out there and a huge, vast populations in the world where they don't currently have that set of value judgments, and that's where the clash comes.
To play
from.
A little bit of devil's advocate, though, it's kind of, I mean, I looked at that initially and thought it's outrageous that they're thinking that they have a right to say, here's what you should or shouldn't do, but we do that over here as well. So we look out to countries who have different beliefs on even the repression of women in some Muslim countries, and not all. You look at Turkey, and you look at a lot of other places who've got politicians who are women, and more politicians and heads of state who are women than we have, and things like that. So not all, but some. And we go, right, they're wrong, and they're backwards thinking. And I kind of do think that, because I do look at it and go, how are you treating women like this as second-class citizens, all this kind of thing. That's not really any different from them trying to impose their beliefs and standards upon us. Because we're looking at them and saying, you can't do that. And we're often stepping in as the UN and saying, you can't run a country like this, human rights, all this kind of thing. So, yeah, that, I mean, that doesn't really help anything. But it's just kind of, I think it's a weird one because we do the same. It's easy. It's at what point, and this is getting too heavy now early on, but at what point do the bad guys think or realise that they're the bad guys? There's a fantastic, is it a David or Mitchell and Webb sketch where they're Nazis and they're going, hang on, our badge has got skulls on it. It's like, no, we're the good guys. Like, no, this feels like we might be there. Are we the bad guys? And yeah, and again, it's a similar thing that it's easy, and they are the bad guys. All of the terrorist attacks, obviously, they're complete scumbag idiots, but it's easy to ignore the stuff that we potentially do in different countries where maybe we're the bad guys in certain situations as well. And again, it fuels this. If we hadn't had so many interventions in the Middle East, we wouldn't have these reactions now. That's directly where it comes from.
Of course it is. If you look at like a lot of the ways people get manipulated in these other countries will be on the grounds of supposed religion. Yeah. But then they look at us and, you know, we'd say a lot of people who don't have that sort of conviction in the West. Pete, it's a cliche, but money is a religion over here now.
Yeah.
And money and the whole basis of money, I won't go on a massive rant about it today, but, you know, interest rates and credit creation, that's all based on just opinion. These are concepts that people have invented and created out of nothing.
Yeah.
That's no different to, in some ways, religion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we sit there, and, you know, they're looking at us thinking about our ways of life and how it boils down to the penny and the pound. And we look at a lot of, you know, their beliefs with it being fixated in religion. And it's just two complete, as I said, like value judgments. You
completely.
Know, have different positions.
Again, it's all conceptual stuff. I had a big argument on Twitter the other day because I did a thing. I closed the web store on Black Friday every year. I do a big thing of don't just fuck it. We're just going
to
close.
I nearly tripled the prices of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I'm about to have the conversation with Stu about me saying, mate, all the prices are going up by three times today
for one day.
If anyone wants a t-shirt,
and it is a lot of effort. It is a lot of effort to do it for one day. But I had that, and one guy tweeted going, it would be good, but I'm still, you lose points for even acknowledging a made up day. I said to him, I was like, all days are made up. So every day's made up. We made up the days. We made everything's fucking made up.
At what point does it not become made up?
Yeah, you exactly.
When you get to put in your Google
Christmas
calendar.
Is made up, or a bank holiday Sunday is made up.
That's okay.
Mate. Anything, we've created everything.
Mm.
Your dog Zavi, shout out to Zavi.
Yeah,
he doesn't know about Sundays.
He does.
Or Tuesdays. He doesn't know specific days. He doesn't know days that these names on days. They're all, everything's made up. Anyway, idiots. But on the I want to go back to something that you were saying there, Stuart. I'm staying on the heaviness for a bit.
All right.
But you were saying about art and comedy and satire. You have known for years Cunt and the Gang.
Yes.
And Cunt and the Gang, if you don't know, a lot of people will know, they are an internet, or he is an internet phenomenon, but they're also, it's a local lad, and from the name you can probably guess, listeners, that it's quite abrasive and offensive stuff.
It's like a funk band from the 70s.
No, it's quite the opposite, but he will discuss really taboo subjects, and in a completely mocking way, rarely with any... just to make clear, there's not some clever twist to it. It's genuinely, right, I'm going to take the piss out of this. But that has to happen, right? That's one of the essential things of comedy, to address subjects and topics like that.
Yeah, of course. Like, I don't know. What he does is puerile, and, you know, and it is lots of knob jokes and things like that, but... He's a clever lad, and he's one of my nearest and dearest friends, and he's carved out a really nice career for himself, and
gone, like, blown up at Edinburgh Fringe and things like that.
Smashed it at the Fringe.
People like Stuart Lee, who's been on the podcast, and numerous others, all raving about him. Yeah,
no way.
Yeah,
and it is puerile and silly, but it's essential. It's also no boundaries and no barriers. And before he was doing Cunt in the Gang, the best or my favourite example of his type of humour and satire was when the big posters were up about pills and ecstasy. Do you want to detail? Are we allowed to go into that? Is he going to get in trouble?
Yeah, let's not do that one.
No?
Let's
about,
not do that one. I'll tell
Amy,
you what,
come about on, it's Amy fine. Because that's kind of similar to the Charlie Hebdo one, isn't it?
The Winehouse one had a big kickback. He did do a very good... He used to go out and do a little bit of... I don't know if you'd call it street art or... But there was a pub not too far from where we are now. And... It was being pulled down, and they were going to put a retirement home there. And it, as that the works were being done on the pub, that the whole surrounding area was like fenced off with big sheets of ply, but they were sort of promotional ply for the retirement home that was going in there. And I think in general there must have been about 50 of these panels, and each panel had a picture of a doctor handing a cup of tea to an elderly woman. And this was a long time ago now. And I remember I was pushing my daughter in a buggy around the shops. And I looked to my right quickly to see that it wasn't just the one, but it was 48 panels of this doctor giving this cup of tea to this elderly woman. But over the doctor's head, he'd actually printed off 48 perfectly sized Harold Shipman heads and put them on the whole thing.
It's darkness. I love it. But again, it's something that, me and you, Chris, have had a lot of listening to Anthony Jeselnik over the years. Yeah. And he's one that, again, is very adamant that it's so essential to make jokes of everything to take the power away from it, you know. So
he just thinks if someone said you can't go there, he's going to go there. And I think that, you know, to me, a sense of humour is... What your sense of humour is doesn't mean that reflects your opinions on life. In fact, I find things that make me laugh are the things that are the most extreme counter things to what I actually...
Well, Joe Rogan talks about it a lot in his stand-up and on his podcast. He's like... These are jokes. I don't mean this shit. If I meant this shit, I'd be a horrible person. I'd be evil. Yeah. And all this is like, it's jokes. It's having fun and having a laugh.
Yeah.
Well, on the podcast in January, I've not got that much in January, but on the podcast, one of the ones I was really excited about was I had a website called fullfact.org, I've told a lot of people about. And it's basically, they're a website that are there for fact-checking. So they will fact check.
Why have you bought this? It's the only one I haven't listened to.
It's fine. I've got others to discuss.
Has listened to.
No. But it's really interesting.
Have you listened to it, Chris?
Because of where we live, they're fucking essential. Because you will have a lot of mates on Facebook, or both of you will. We'll have a lot of mates. But you will have mates on Facebook that. Embarrassing at points with some of the stuff that they'll share or agree of Britain First.
Look at me.
We live in Thurrock, which is a big or was a big BNP stronghold. It's a UKIP stronghold. And one of the things that a full fact do is they'll go through and fact check a lot of the Britain First posts and stuff like that and show the actual statistics
That's quite current, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I'm incorrect in saying that Britain First lost their Facebook page.
They lost it, but it's got... No, it was a bullshit campaign, I believe, on Britain First's part.
Oh, okay.
I believe they kind of faked we've been kicked off as a publicity thing.
Oh, really?
From what I've heard now, it looked like they started to drum up this whole support us, blah, 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 and it looks like it was they kind of faked being kicked off to get to get more attention, which is a solid thing. I'm still convinced that Six Music was never under any threat of being cut at all, because the biggest thing that happened to Six Music was a threat to take it away, and then it became this huge entity. So I don't know if Britain First have looked at their opposite of a really left-leaning, cool, friendly station and gone, let's do some of that, let's pretend we're under threat. And
long shot.
Is that like a kid like threatening to leave home?
Yeah, exactly. It's the boy who cried a racist wolf. It's the boy who cried wolf, go back to your own country.
Sounds like an 80s wrestler.
Yeah. I mean, I should mention we're also around the corner from where Gladiator Wolf lived for a long time.
Well, we're just up the road from where he had a sports shop in the town centre.
He had a sports shop, didn't he? On the
Wolf Sports.
Straight to the point, yeah.
Didn't someone try to break into his Ferrari and he just absolutely lit them up?
Probably.
Do you remember that story? Yeah, they tried breaking in and like
just come steaming just out of like
the worst of all the gladiators to cars to try and nick. And he just bent them in half. Basically.
I just don't know. He was the worst of all the gladiators to cop an hiding off of. Yeah. Like, he was older than your dad.
He was the oldest by a long way. He was the oldest by a long, long way. Good old Wolf.
He's the bestest.
Other ones I highlighted from January were Stuart Lee and Riz Ahmed. And Stuart Lee, I've just had Richard Herring on this month, and Stuart Lee for me was one of the ones I was most nervous about because I'm a massive... I think Stuart Lee, as a British comedian, no doubt at all, he's my favourite British comedian. I think the way he crafts his sets, he's an absolute genius. But he's also quite grumpy and curmudgeonly on stage and in interviews, so I didn't know how he'd be, but on the podcast he was the loveliest, friendliest dude, and just had a manic laugh and was thoroughly enjoyable.
I'd imagine
you'll have to imagine as you've not listened, but go on.
Quite intimidated by that because he's an intelligent, like he's quite incisive,
but again he pulled that away. He was the most friendly and warm and lovable. And towards the end of the year before, I'd had Dylan Moran on, which was one that I've mentioned. I struggled with. It was a really hard interview, and it wasn't his fault, or it might have been my fault, but it was quite a last minute one. I don't think he really knew it was a podcast, so he was expecting quite a quick thing, so he was giving a lot of short one word answers and stuff like that. So I thought this could be the same with Stuart Lee, but complete opposite, just the friendliest and loveliest dude.
Yeah.
And then Riz Ahmed as well, who, again, I'm a massive fan of his spoken word and his acting, and he spoke...
I thought it was brilliant.
He spoke amazingly on that. Mm. Just, again, he was one that was a lot of people like, I didn't really know who he was, but he's so intelligent.
And he just, correct me if I'm wrong, he just done a film with Gyllenhaal at that point?
He'd just done Nightcrawlers, which was fantastic. One of my films of last year. It was amazing, and he just spoke. It was really interesting hearing that at his point, or when he started his career, and still now, there were more opportunities for a British Asian man in America than in UK films, because Britain only really made period dramas.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a lot of Asians in because we were a rampaging country of white people.
Yeah.
And that was something that I was like, I'd never even. Thought of that. And the fact is, his first, because Nightcrawler was a huge thing and really acclaimed, his first big, I'd say, was the co-star in that. He was Gyllenhaal's sidekick. So yeah, his first really big thing, and it's like, he's had to go to America to not just play. Obviously, he did Four Lions and numerous other things, but in that, he's very much playing.
Yeah.
That, you know, is,
I watched that again the other day.
I love Four Lions. Absolutely awesome. Amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. Riz has been wicked in everything. I mean, I think the first thing I saw
he's
him
one of the
in
best.
Was, what,
he's
was
one
it
of
Shifty?
Best.
Was he in
Shifty?
Thing?
Yeah, he's amazing in Shifty.
That was a really good film.
Made by Aaron Creevy, and it was part of a micro budget project where they had $100,000, and that was it, which is a micro budget in film terms. And they made it all, and it's, He then went on to make Welcome
to the Punch,
to the
which
me
and you went to see.
It's great.
On that Riz Ahmed podcast, if anyone's listening hasn't caught it, what I did do
after... Because listened to it.
I listened to it. What was that tune?
Sour Times,
Man.
Absolutely amazing. It's one of two times, I think, I've played a song on the podcast. Yeah. In general, I think it kills the podcast. I've had a few people on who were like, oh, can we drop a song? And I'm like, it doesn't really work. But
check that out.
He played Sour Times. In the video, actually, it's got me and Tom Hardy.
Really?
Yeah, because he got a load of people he knew to lip sync it, either on a webcam or filming it somewhere. And then they put together a video of that. Because it's interesting. He's balanced that a music career as a really good... a rapper, a really good spoken word artist, and excelling in acting. So, he kind of pulled all his contacts.
He sounded like a really safe geezer as well.
And again, it's a depressingly relevant track, considering it came out probably 3 or 4 years ago, Sour Times, but it's about the misperception of Muslims in the UK. Yeah, it's powerful. It's powerful. Let's get on. Let's all relax a bit and get on to some MMA. Or if you get anything, Chris, sorry, I don't want to jump on.
We're good. We've been good with January.
Let's get to some MMA, because that's what we... I've kind of prefixed this by we meet up at the club night, have a few drinks and talk about what's happened that month. It's pretty much exclusively what's happened in mixed martial arts that month.
Yeah,
so
it starts a little bit earlier than that, because just to paint the picture of how we Pip's brother comes and picks me up, and Pip's already in the car.
He's in Malaysia at the moment, so can't be part of this. I was going to have him as the only intelligent one, but
and DJ Destruction's in the car as well, who has no idea about anything involving MMA.
Yeah, he's not interested at all,
or anything like that.
Poor old Destruction.
Poor man. He gets in the car, and literally by the time we've got to the end of my road, we discuss MMA from mine to the venue.
Yeah.
And
which can be an hour, can be 90 minutes, can be 2 hours, and the poor lad's just sat there not interested.
I cherish that shit.
Yeah. It's the one. But January had Jones Cormier, was the one that I flagged as the big one of that year. That was a massive, massive fight. Had the build up was postponed from the year before, had the fight in the press conference.
Well, that was really weird.
This is amazing.
Because I was in Vegas.
Yeah.
For my wife's 40th, and we literally went out there, and it was like, I want to go and see Floyd's gym and go and see what's going on out there and have a little look about. And there's actually a picture to the right of Leon Spinks fighting Muhammad Ali there. And
nice.
I met Leon Spinks in Vegas, and he signed that picture where he beat Ali. Yeah. And
did he have it on him?
What, the picture?
Yeah.
Funnily enough, he had a stack at the table he was sitting at in the sports shop.
That's fair enough, then. I thought you just bumped into him. He was like, I've got a few of these.
Funny you should say that. Let me start with his briefcase. But, where was I going with it? And literally, it was obviously, it's ridiculously hot out there. And we'd done everything we set out to do when we was in Vegas, but I really wanted to go to the MGM Grand.
Yeah.
And outside there was loads of posters advertising upcoming, UFC events. And on the last day, we walked right the way up the strip and got to New York, and it was like, right, should we cross the road and go in MGM Grand and have a look about? And it was so hot, and it was the end of the day. It was like, no, can't be bothered. And then literally that afternoon was the Jones tear up.
You could have popped in and
MGM
witnessed that
Grand
live.
Foyer, and I missed it.
And what happened for people listening, particularly those who aren't MMA fans, actually, was they had their kind of press conference and they square up to each other for a photo and they pushed each other and kicked off. And the reason I say particularly for those who aren't MMA fans is that people who aren't MMA fans generally think that that's what happens all the time. But in general, it's not. It's a very... Other than Connor, it's quite a polite and restrained and reserved sport. And they'll have these whole media tours where they're having to be really face-to-face with the guy they're going to fight. But they're sportsmen. They're not they're not people in the car park with beef. They're athletes and sportsmen who are engaging in a contest of skill and determination.
How long have you had that conversation with
people?
People
still don't see it that
because,
way.
Because I still have that conversation and have to explain that at length. That when I talk about MMA, they're like, oh, the cage fight and all the barbarism. And it's like you're going
it's that word. It's cage fighting. As soon as people hear the word cage
but they,
fighting.
But then they link that to it. So when I say mixed martial arts or UFC...
Yeah.
And then I'll write cage fighting. It's
I always end up going mixed martial arts, because if you say a UFC, they'll generally go, oh, what, like wrestling? And think it's a fake thing, like the WWF or whatever. And it's like, well, no, it's the best sport in the world.
Yeah.
I love it. But yes, so that was a big fight. And it was seen as Jones's first real, or the first fight in a while that people saw as a potential, he could get beaten here. Cormier's Olympic medalist in wrestling. And again, I think that's really, it's not so much over here, but it's really giving it or legitimising it in America, is that so many of the top fighters now are Olympic medalists. So it's like, it's not just some big bloke who's tough. It's like, these are athletes, these are professional sportsmen and athletes.
So skilled in an array of different martial arts and combat sports. It's not like, taking nothing away from boxing, obviously there's a stack of signed pictures of my favourite boxers on this wall.
How many people have you accosted with pictures just as they walk out the gym?
But that's one discipline, I think, to be a at the UFC level.
And I'm not underselling
any other organisation, but you need to be an elite boxer, and again, elite wrestler, and, elite BJJ, you know.
And the UFC level now, I remember getting really excited when I got it was before they were available anywhere to pay for. Someone gave me a DVD of like UFC 1 to 20. It was like the biggest, most exciting thing. And we put them on. And they were fun to watch, but I lost interest pretty quick because they weren't athletes. They were at that point a boxer against a tough guy, or a taekwondo guy against a sumo guy.
A boxer with one glove on and one hand free. It was humanity's version of Street Fighter 2 in a way, wasn't it?
Exactly. Whereas now it is everyone. You have to be an athlete and in all disciplines. So the reason that was interesting was Cormier is this Olympic level wrestler against Jones, who's beaten everyone up and just kind of trained himself, and it's quite weird, but Jones just dominated him, just absolutely, he out wrestled him. He didn't go in there and just beat him up, he out wrestled him and just he shamed him.
I know you said that Cormier was the first one that legitimately people thought was a threat.
I
agree with what you're saying, because he wasn't seen as a threat. Well, he was, but not a massive threat. But I thought, you know, Gustafsson had already highlighted quite a few flaws
Jones in interviews after that, Jones in interviews after that said that Cormier wasn't his great challenge. He's gone on record saying Gustafsson was the guy who put it.
But
put
that
it
was
down.
It. So maybe partly it was Cormier's pedigree, but partly because Gustafsson had exposed Jones a bit that made him look beatable. Because prior to Gustafsson, Gustafsson was one of the biggest write-offs in a title fight. No one expected him to have any chance at all. People were like, how's he got this title shot? He's been jumped ahead and fast-forwarded. So the fact he then did go and put that on was kind of amazing.
I think Gustafsson's amazing.
Yeah.
And you know I don't like Cormier.
I love Cormier. I think he's great.
Do you know what, as well? Can we just say on that? Because when you start talking about Cormier, like that whole thing, I was Jones's biggest fan when we first started watching him knocking people out left, right, and centre, and just his striking and how he used to go at people from different angles. I loved him. And when the more and more established he got, and the more he started talking, the less and less I started seeing cracks in this guy, and I didn't really like his character as much.
Jones lost a lot of people. It was bizarre. Jones, and people forget this, but Jones came out as almost too much of a superhero. The day he had his title fight against Shogun, so he's 19 or something, he's got his title fight against Shogun. He's out jogging and he stops a bag thief. He chases down a thief, and it's like, instantly I was watching that, I was like, fuck off, mate. come on. Not only are you the toughest guy in the world, you're also stopping thieves in the park and you're a superhero.
You've kicked one too many boxes, mate. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I do need to highlight, though, that it's been this year, really, that Chris, you've come back into the UFC fold.
I had about a 2-year
hiatus. You drifted off a bit because you had kind of a second puberty, I like to look at it as just because you did. I remember it used to be me, you, and my brother, and sometimes Stu Turl when alone, would all stay up and watch them live.
Yeah.
And you quite logically and fairly said to me one day, I need to go out and meet girls. I can't spend every Saturday night in your living room watching men fight. And that was a legitimate argument to me. Yeah, I didn't get it, but, you know, I'd rather watch men fight in their pants.
Obviously,
but
he's back doing it again now.
He's back now, yeah.
The sex had got stale with you, elsewhere.
The grass isn't always green on the other side, is it?
It wasn't.
Stop trawling clubs to come back to my living room. But, yeah, you've returned to the UFC fold.
Back to the fold. Thankfully, I've been welcomed. Because
not really back to the fold.
Not everyone. Like you've been quite exclusive with your UFC membership. Really.
Yeah, I should
get
reveal
banned
this.
From coming to watch shows.
I banned people. I banned one person for being racist. Yeah, that's a legit banning.
I missed that. I wish I was there for
I banned other people because they were coming along thinking ignorantly that it was a social event.
They were talking
a lot, but they were talking and saying, oh, God, I'm just not into this MMA stuff. So, get the fuck out of my house. Why are you here?
The great hypocrisy of that is we'd talk.
but we're watching and we're into
it, but you're not going, why are they laying down?
Yeah.
It's better when they hit each other.
So I did ban people, and it was kind of a joke ban, but it stuck, and it's now, for a good year or two, it was just me and my brother every Saturday night, just up till 5, 6 a.m., just watching the fights.
Did you stop going, was this before or after you said you turned up round Pips with two chickens?
What?
I think he was on a health kick.
No, that was before. And again, as you said, you took two cooked chickens.
Right.
I mean, as tonight will be, at some point, I think we're going to order pizza quite soon, really. But
we've got cheese balls at the moment.
The UFCs are generally the night off of any health kick. And Chris turned up one time with some chicken and some water.
Was that pre?
That was a way back. And then, yeah. Again, the health kick. That didn't turn out either, did it? No one can say.
I'm kidding.
But that was kind of it for January for me. I looked through the film releases, and January's always a bit of a dry one for that kind of thing. So let's quickly just get what you guys did on New Year's Eve that year.
I sat where I'm sitting there.
Sweet.
I literally can't even remember. So am I set up here? Is something going to happen?
You partied hard there. No, there's not a surprise.
Okay,
just thought I'd ask.
That's when, you know, that happened. And I'm like,
it was the first New Year's. I hadn't put an event on for about 20 years. I hadn't DJed, I hadn't promoted anything. And so I built this little bar in my garden. So I had all my friends over. And we booked a...
Were both of them available?
Both of them, yeah. You're both welcome again this year, guys.
We didn't come.
I've mentioned this numerous times, but I spend every New Year's at home. I'm a big fan of it, but I do look forward to it, and I watch a film, and I watched Aguirre, The Wrath of God that year, which is...
I haven't seen that.
Werner Herzog. It's great. It's got the best scene with monkeys in, outside of Dunstan checks in. which is a classic.
I'll go and watch it.
Let's move on to February. I've got a film here, so let's go on to some films. In fact, February's a big film month for me, which I might ramble on because I had my first ever audition for a film. But we'll get to that. Did either of you see The Kingsman?
I actually put it on the other night. Fell asleep.
You fell asleep.
You've been so itching to ask me to watch it. Like,
yeah, because I think
this dude's like,
because I think it's totally up your street. Yeah, it is a comic book film, but it was good.
But like, I had to get up, and I was like, shit,
it's fair. I mean, I was skeptical of it when I heard about it and I saw the casting, but it was all amazing. And it's just, yeah, I won't talk about it too long. But one of the villains in it is a young lady. I've forgotten her name. I follow her on Twitter and everything. But anyway, she was previously like a dancer, I think, for Madonna and all sorts of people. And then this was one of her first big film roles. And you'll love it because it's like an ultimate martial arts villain. Like, you like a good martial arts film.
And
stuff like that. And yeah, great villain, great movie.
Ironically, they put it on and fell asleep. That was the same with the Alan Moore podcast, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, I had to go.
You do a lot of sleeping.
I mean, we
can move on from that. Let's get back to MMA quickly. I think we're going to smash... The plan was to smash through the first few months because there's not that much, but we're almost at the hour mark already. So
really?
Let's get through February quickly. Ronda Rousey, Kat Zingano.
Yep.
Man, that was a painful fight to watch.
Yeah,
because Kat was another one where you kind of felt she's a threat.
Be the one.
She'd been through so much. She'd had the title shot and then got injured and lost it. Her fucking husband passed away and so much sad stuff. And she built her way up to and she was meant to be the coach on the TV show and then she got injured. So really, truly dramatic story. And then Ronda, I think, got her first fight that could fit into a Vine.
It was the first one that you get on Instagram.
Yeah. So it was like instantly she just absolutely smashed it. And
I can remember sitting there and going, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
It ridiculous.
And it's crap because everyone said, oh, because basically what happened is Kat Zingano rushed straight out and went for a flying knee. And Ronda just got her on the floor and tapped her out. And everyone said, that's bad tactics or everything else. But at that point, obviously we'll get on to the end of the year, Ronda, but at that point, everything anyone had tried against Ronda hadn't worked. So I don't think it's the same when people say about Anderson Silva and Weidman saying, oh, we messed about and got caught. It's like, no, he did that with Griffin and it worked. Yeah. He did that. He's done that his whole career and it's worked. He did that with Bonner and it worked. This time it didn't work. That doesn't mean he got too cocky or fucked up. It's just it didn't work this time. Yeah, it's his style. So I felt that was a legitimate idea to rush Ronda catch, because everyone tends to. The argument at that point was that people were too scared of her or showed her too much respect. So the ultimate thing is to rush her immediately, flying knee, but it didn't work out.
Away from her. You don't want her getting a hit near you.
Yeah, I mean, but then, you know, other than turning down the fight, you've kind of got to come up with something new, kind of thing. No, you know?
I totally respect
and have
that.
It right, like, Kat smashed it, didn't she, up until then?
Yeah.
She was
absolutely fantastic. Mm. Just really her striking, her ground and pound, everything. Just really, and her determination. She was one of the first that you felt was possibly as hard as Ronda.
Yeah.
Like, just generally, just like, this is a tough girl. This is like, you really felt she doesn't mind if she gets punched and
there's,
you know.
There's a degree of risk going in like that.
Yeah.
When you haven't figured someone out. And you fly in like that. But even saying the degree of risk, I thought she did get a little bit unlucky with how that then turned out, that exchange. But like you say, she's decided to open like that.
Yeah.
And she's got punished for it.
I'm going to move on from that now because I'm worried we will just talk about MMA all night. And some listeners might not enjoy that. I'm still in February, but go ahead.
February movies 71. Did you guys watch
71? Yeah, I love 71.
Man, I've got a thing for, you know, I love watching Jack. I've got a thing for Jack O'Connell at the moment.
He's great.
But he's awesome.
And when that came out,
we were so looking forward to it, and it did disappoint.
And that's one that right now is on, like, on-demand stuff. I think it might even be on Netflix now, but it's definitely on a lot of the on-demand stuff.
Last night or the night before.
It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And it's about the 70s during the Troubles, and a soldier basically getting stuck in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd heard it was good. I didn't know what to expect. It's similar in a way with Pride, which was I did see in 2015 actually. It came out in 2014, but it was one that, again, I'd heard loads of recommendations, but I'd kind of gone in watching thinking I'm not really going to enjoy this, but absolutely blew me away. Just amazingly done.
I've not seen Pride.
It's really good. It's really good. The only podcast I wanted to jump on this one was I had Rufus Hound on in February, and Rufus Hound was another one that Stu didn't listen to. Obviously, one of the many that Chris didn't. But no, the only reason I mentioned it was one of the ones that was so beautiful, seeing so many people surprised. Because again, it's ones like that, and it's why I was excited to do these review ones. Because the fact is, even if you've got a big guest, that big guest will put off a certain amount of people because they go, "Oh, either I don't know who Rufus Hound is, or I'm not a fan of Rufus Hound."
Yeah.
And if your busy life's as so on and so forth, you might not give it a listen. But he was a great one because he's so intelligent politically and socially, and just we had a really good chat. And a lot of people just know him from A Celebrity Juice, which is quite crude and quite offensive. So he was a highlight of that month for me, because I knew he was an intelligent and political guy. So it was great to have a lot of people kind of tune in and go, "All right, I thought it was just kind of offensive dick jokes and stuff like that." But he's very intelligent young man. So that was good fun. Have you got anything else, Chris, for that?
No, fire away. I feel bad that I just want to apologise to everyone that Stuart didn't watch that podcast.
Yeah,
that's out of order. Let us down there.
You don't really watch podcasts, though, Chris. You generally listen to it.
He's new to podcasts.
I don't know if you're looking for cameras, but there's none in here. It's just an audio thing, mate.
That's what I've been doing wrong. I'm just staring at the screen on mute and nothing's happening.
I've almost skipped past that. February, and I didn't tell anyone about it at the time, but February was when I had my first ever film audition, and when I started my first ever film.
Man,
it was for Knights of the Round Table, Arthur, which is the Guy Ritchie film, which we ended up filming over several months. But it's kind of an interesting and weird story, because I decided I was taking a year off from gigs to try acting out. And I spent, as all of us are, I'm quite a proactive guy and kind of like to just try and figure out. So I spent an evening going through casting directors and writers, and then looking them up on Twitter and following them. And one that I couldn't find was this guy called Reg, who incidentally did the casting for Kingsman. It's one of the reasons I looked him up. He did Kingsman and Guardians of the Galaxy. I looked him up and thought, wow, I need to find him. I couldn't find it. The next day, I had an email from him. Purely out of chance. It was really bizarre. And he said, "Look, me and Guy are fans. oh, we'd like you to come and do a read on camera for this film. So I went down there, and it was exactly as sleazy as you imagine a casting to be. It was literally in a basement.
I don't know what sort of casting you imagine.
Yeah, but you know, you know what sort of casting you're imagining, Chris. It was a basement with one camera on a tripod, like some crates in the corner. And I was literally like, wow, I'm going to get murdered or seduced.
Better.
And yeah, I went in there already. It's medieval. So I'd learnt my lines. Because it's medieval and I'm new to this, I'd learn it all like, we must take the castle. And in like the medieval voice that people do in films. And I got there, he's literally saying like, we'll have a run through. And I was like, just quickly, like, what kind of voice kind of thing? Because like, shall I be... It is time to attack and that kind of thing. And he literally
did you do that voice.
I wish he'd done that voice.
Only for that long. Because he went, no, Pip, we like your voice. It's one of the reasons that we've asked you in. Because then they listen to the podcast and stuff like that. Like, just do it in your voice. And it genuinely.
Do it in Stanford.
It genuinely meant I didn't know how the audition went because I'd practiced it all so much in this stupid voice. I then just. Said the words out loud in my own voice. Was like, I don't know how that worked out. But it turns out I got it and got to go. And my first day on set, I was also in February, I think, and it was in Snowdonia, right up the road from where you and me went cave crawling.
Yeah,
remember from Mark Irvine's the famous, infamous Mark Irvine of Mark Irvine Fest. A lot of people know about that. But yeah, it was up there, and also.
Right by where me and you climbed it.
Yeah, and yeah,
and
we died. Climbed it. There's all the references.
Don't need to go into that again.
So yes, that's another another thing you could look up on YouTube. We're at the end now, so it's easier. But when me, Stu, Tom...
Your brother.
And my brother did the Movember, and we climbed Snowdonia. So yeah, we climbed that. That's all on YouTube. So we're there, and I won't go into tons of it because it will get a bit boring, but... I get there the day before, and I've met the AD guy, and I'm all like, I'm new to all this, so I'm a bit nervous. I'm just going off to bed, and he's like, Pip, so have you ridden a horse before? And I'd literally never been on a horse in my life, and I just went, oh no, it wasn't even it. He said, can you ride a horse? And I didn't want to put him off, so I was like, not that I can't. I never have, but I'm not. You know, I'm not scared of it. So let's just give it a go. Yeah. And then they booked me in for a load of horse riding lessons on a horse called Bjork. Fucking loved it.
Yeah, I bet
it's
you
one
did.
Of my favourite things.
A horse and Bjork.
And Bjork.
Combined.
Yeah. So I did.
You're a tall dude. I haven't seen you right like on this horse yet.
Everyone I know I've told about it just says it's the most hilarious image of me on a horse.
On a horse.
And I'm a lot of torso. I'm mainly torso.
He's like a lizard.
Have you ever seen in one of the Muppet movies from the 80s when Kermit rides a bike?
That's exactly what I would be like on a horse.
Weird thing to see. I can only equate it to that.
God damn it.
You never meant to see Kermit's legs.
But yeah, had all this training on a horse, me and my boy Fergal, and we never got to ride a horse in any of the filming of it. We did a few months, only bits here and there. I've got a small role, but I got to have an axe fight. I got to have all sorts of other stuff, but I never got to ride a horse.
I'm ridiculously jealous of this as well. I mean, I'm not even... I've been quite vocal about that, because... Yeah. He's like, yeah, Chris, well, today I went in and it's just like a massive castle invasion and just everything's happening at once. And this is my dream job.
It's that is living a dream, isn't it? Like,
and Irvine were the first people I text just going, so I've been called in early because I have to have axe fight training.
Axe fight training. And he's like... Oh man, yeah. Axe fight training.
I don't know if you were about...
I mean, I do that on my own anyway at home, let alone get paid for it.
I think it might even have been sort of the beginning of this year. But I listened to Ray Winston on Desert Island Discs.
Yeah.
And have you heard it?
No, I haven't.
It's a really good listen. But he talks about... what was the movie with... is it called Cold Mountain?
Cold Mountain.
With Renée Zellweger.
Yeah.
And he said... when he was on set for that... I'm sure he said he wasn't actually meant to be riding a horse, But there was one there, and he was done up as in his cowboy get-up. Yeah. And and I don't mean that in a Cockney rhyming slang kind of way for Ray Winston.
He was dressed cowboy, as a, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's not being filmed, so he's like, right, okay. So he's got on this horse, and he's got his gun that fires blanks, and he said, I knew I was going to get in a lot of shit for it, but I can't not do it. So he said, I literally just went yee-haw, fired a few rounds in the air, and just bolted through the middle of the set, riding an horse dressed as a cowboy. He said, it was like, I got in so much shit, but like, you know, I've been wanting to do that since I was six.
Yeah, wow. Of course. Wow. It is the dream. We, like, on that night, there was like this castle invasion, and me and Fergal were the least important people. So we had our own fight scenes, which meant we couldn't be in the general melee, because we couldn't be then, if they cut to us having a fight scene and then we're in the background somewhere else. So we were there from about, I think we got there at 5:30 for training, and literally, again, like, we could have gone and sat in a trailer, but we were stood watching it, because they're storming a castle. But until about, it got to about 1:30, 2 a.m, and we hadn't had our fight scene, and we stood there watching in our gap, and me and Fergal go, I reckon they're going to cut us. Like, I reckon that we're not going to have our fight scene. And we both literally just went, it's a fucking great Friday night, though, isn't it? literally just like, I don't care if they don't even film our fight scene. It's a hell of a Friday night. Just standing on the top of a castle, just watching a castle get stormed and fire and explosions and all sorts of mayhem.
100%. I mean, I think that's an experience most dudes, a lot of girls too, like to be involved with.
Yeah.
I think that about The Walking Dead sometimes as well. Like, how many of these, like, these extras do they have getting made up as zombies?
Can I tell you what?
I
don't think I've told you, but I've been trying to convince Chris recently he should become a stuntman, because I think it'd be great. Because don't pull that face. I'll explain, because we'll get onto the bastard executioner later. But no, even in Arthur, actually, the great thing with that was there were bits where the fight scene was going on, and there were people, and I'm just watching, and there were people at my feet beating the shit out of each other. Now, if they're at my feet, I know they're not on camera, because I'm not in this scene, yet they're going all out. And I was like, you'd love that. Like, that'd be such a good job for you to just go and just scrap all day, 100%. Just have these fight scenes and all sorts. So,
cut.
Stop! Just stop. Someone call him off.
Someone taser Glasson. All right. Just while we're talking about TV shows and that, my missus booked us tickets today. We're going to do the opening night of the new Crystal Maze.
Oh my gosh! Oh, yes, wow. We're going to do that. Yeah, from March 2016.
Yeah,
we are just plugging everything tonight. Yeah. But that, Stu, we're
Crystal
on that. As well.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
Like, we should also do that. We should, like, you need like 4 or 8 people.
Yeah,
and you can get and go and do a Crystal.
Yeah,
go and do the Crystal Maze.
I mean, do they do a celebrity one or? But yeah, no, it does look absolutely amazing, doesn't it? I've been reading about that as well. Where is it? Is it in London now? Because they were doing
Kings
Wales,
Cross, I believe.
King's Cross.
Mm.
It's going to be so good. I just want to say, leave the crystal. Come out. Just leave the crystal, because I like.
That's my advice
in so many situations in life in general. If something's getting a bit stressed, just leave the crystal. Well, I'm going to wrap this episode one up now, because we're at the hour mark, and there'll be some ads to go in. Obviously, I've not even plugged the speechdevelopmentrecords.com advert I normally do. So, just done it there, didn't I? Sneakily, do you like that? But we're going to be back next week, and I promise we'll go through a bit quicker. We've got to March. That's all we've done so far. But fucking hell. And we're going to drink more, but we'll get through it. So thanks for tuning in, and see you all next week.
You've been listening to Scrooby's Picks. Discretion pieces.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.